trumpet, he will.
It's the Skinny on Sports Podcast with Aaron Cowan.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Cowan with the Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Thursday out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to the Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Got some golf to talk about. PGA Championship is underway. The leaderboard is stacked already. Some guys you expected, some guys you didn't expect, and some guys that have played like crap all year have turned it on early. I'll give you a PGA Championship leaderboard update as we move along throughout the show. Does your level of excitement go up for these majors because of LIV? Because you finally get to see all the guys in the same places, which LIV takes away. And one of the most annoying things in golf recently is over. The block party is over. Tell you what that means. Oklahoma dominated yesterday at Rancho Santa Fe. California came storming back to win that regional. Oklahoma State is going on to nationals as well with the tie third. And shockers, as the 1 and 2 seeds do not advance. It's time to start talking college football. Here's the deal. Our first topic would be Thunder. I'm pretty pessimistic about their chances on Saturday, so I've already kind of moved on in my mind to college football. Hopefully the Thunder can surprise me. But two questions today in college football that I'd love to get everybody's answers to, including Jared's. Number one, give me the top five teams with the best chance to make their first playoff appearance this season. Obviously, Texas made their first playoff appearance a year ago. Who are the top five that have never made the playoffs that have the best chance this season? And then also, what are the top five programs to have never made the playoffs going into this year? So those are the two questions on the board. Doesn't have to be the same five. Obviously, you might have a couple in there for both, but you might not. And then the NBA playoffs, Thunder facing elimination after last night. What happened? Are you surprised how effective Dallas is with Kyrie Irving really not doing much? And then what's the biggest issue for OKC? Can it get fixed in order to win this series? 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. That is 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things or whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. Going to be outside the listening area. A couple ways to stay in touch with the show. You can log on to KADSAM.com or download the app. The app's got all the radio. It's got the Penny News. Brand new edition of the Penny News is out on your favorite local newsstand. Go pick up a free copy of the Penny News. Big Elk and Paragon TV. Some graduation's coming Friday at Canute, Saturday here at Oak City. And then also Skinny on Sports Podcast. If you missed the show entirely, you can go back and check it out. How are you today, Jared?
Good. How are you doing?
Just fine. This rain is making me excited for what my lawn is going to look like here in a couple of weeks, what the golf course is going to look like here in a couple of weeks, because I think after maybe tomorrow, early tomorrow or through the day tomorrow, then it looks like it clears out and it gets hot. And what does that mean? Bermuda grass is going to be growing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe filling in some spots that aren't as great in my yard. So I'm excited. How about you?
Yeah. I put a lot of work in it last weekend, so this rain is very welcomed at my house. It came at the exact right time. It's like I planned it, and there's no way you can plan for that. So, yeah, I'm very excited about it. Just worried that I won't have time to mow it when I need to mow it.
Yeah.
There's been times.
Excuse me.
I've let it go away. It's been bad. Just finding that time to do it. But
I was noticing last night, and I was trying to get the pool cleaned and ready to go, opened and everything. I was shooting some water out of it in a certain spot in our backyard. And I was like, whoa, look how tall that grass is. And there was water basically standing before I even shot pool water over there.
Yeah.
So I decided that obviously it's raining, did rain, probably going to be too wet to mow this evening, but weed eating is going to be a must just to at least, you know, try to class the joint up just a little bit until I can mow.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one thing about it raining almost daily. It's hard. If you miss it before, then it's going to look like nobody lives at your house once it does start raining, especially once it starts getting warm. I'm going to say hopefully tomorrow, if not probably Saturday, get a mower on that stuff. And next week might be like a two-mow week. It really does turn off to be 90, like it's calling for it the first of next week, sunny and 90, yeah, the Bermuda grass will be, it'll be maybe three times mowing it in 10-day stretch or something like that.
I believe it. I'm just trying to think when I'm going to do that, but yeah, I'm happy about it. Yeah, I mean, someone said let it rain. Obviously, the farmers and ranchers love it.
Yes.
I love last night's result. I was prepared to cover some severe weather and maybe for 45 minutes in north part of Roger Mills County. I got to do that.
Yeah, I was wondering.
That was it.
If that was the only one. I saw that one early.
That was it. Dog woke me up this morning and he needed to go outside. So I let him out and it was raining. I could hear the thunder and I could see lightning to the east. And I thought, oh, did I miss something?
Yeah.
I checked. Nope. Just one of those heavy rain showers with some thunderclaps in it. That was about it. So I'll take all the rain, though, with no severe weather.
No.
I was excited. I set up a little home studio,
mm-hmm.
hooked up, ready to go. I mean, I was all, and I mean, to the point, I was like, you know what? I'll go ahead and do a break. I got this set up.
Just to check it out.
I set it up and did a couple breaks, actually, just to say I could do it. But then nothing happened. So, yeah.
Sam's back in the country. It's good to know. It's a lonely place without Sam.
The text line was quiet for a while.
It's a lonely place, but he's back. He is back. All right. Last night, Thunder. They did make a change in the starting lineup, which I was shocked about. I can't believe they really did it, but they did. Replacing Josh Giddey with Isaiah Joe in the starting lineup. They didn't just get way behind. So I would say that in theory that probably worked. I mean, the deficit was what, 5 or 6 maybe instead of 8 or 12 there in the first quarter. And that was all just right at the, you know, Oklahoma City led what, 8-2 or 9-2 at one point?
Yeah, a little flash to start. Yeah. That's about it. Yeah.
Then in the second quarter, Thunder outscored 30-22, down 10 going into the second half. And there was many runs, okay runs. I don't know. It just – last night was one of those games that it really felt like game 4, except for Dallas didn't let the Thunder back in it with missed free throws. It was a game that it never, once it got to halftime or even midway through the second quarter, to me – it never felt like Oklahoma City was going to win that game.
No.
It just was one of those. And Luka was awesome with 31, 10 rebounds, 11 assists, only 3 turnovers. You know, last game, he similar numbers, but he had like 7 or 8 turnovers this time. And he shot the ball better, 50% from the field, only and 5 of 11 from 3. Derek Jones at one point was 6 of 6 and 3 of 3. I mean, that's, to me, the series boils down to – you know, Luka and SGA have kind of canceled each other out, although SGA has scored more points than Luka. But Dallas has had by far the better performances from their other guys. You know, last night, Jones with 19. P.J. Washington has went nuts twice in this series with 29 and 27 in games 2 and 3. And we just haven't seen that performance out of anybody outside of SGA on the Oklahoma City side. And if you say what happened or why is Oklahoma City down 3-2, I think it's simple. You can complain and moan about Giddy, and I get the numbers, and some of them make a lot of sense. But the fact of the matter is, if you want to blame somebody, blame J-Dub. Jalen Williams has not been the player he was in the regular season. Last night, doesn't get to the free throw line, scores 12 points on 6 of 13 shooting. He just has not been the budding superstar in the series that everybody thinks that he is. And that's a huge difference. And crazily enough, he's kind of canceled out Kyrie, because I still can't believe what's happening for the Mavericks without Kyrie Irving really playing all that important a part in it. You know, last night he scored 12 points on 11 shots. Maybe we're not giving him enough credit for defending Jalen Williams and kind of deferring and letting Luka run the offense. But it really is shocking to me how effective Dallas has been without Kyrie really even having a what you'd consider a good game yet.
Well, they don't need him to, right? With Washington still shooting the way he's shooting and everyone else being a big part, Luka doing his thing too last night. So Kyrie's thinking, man, I can – it's like load management in a way. It's like I can relax, let these guys do their thing. I don't have to overexude anything and then get ready for the next round. So it's been a bonus that everyone around him has been playing really, really good. Yeah, J-Dub, I think the youth showing up, I guess, is a little bit of that. I don't know if the moment's too big for him. I thought we were past that with how they won game 4. Yeah, just some growing pains, I guess, what we're looking at with him. It's frustrating.
Three-point shooting has been atrocious in this series. The best three-point shooting team in the league this year was Oklahoma City. That's now 4 straight where they haven't cracked the 33% mark. That hasn't happened in four straight games for the Thunder since 2022. You know, but give the Mavs some credit defensively. Obviously, at the rim, they've been awesome, not allowing Oklahoma City to get anything at the rim, which if you watch the regular season, that was a huge part. Yeah, they were a great three-point shooting team, but a bunch of that was because they were able to get to the rim at will, get in the paint at will, which then created those open shots. Last night, I thought they got the best looks of the series, counting game 1 included, that they didn't make them.
I guess shoot better.
That's part of that is just the byproduct of how well Dallas has played defensively, maybe speeding them up a little bit because they're not accustomed to having time at that much time to take a shot, and so you're rushing it just a little bit, even though they're open. But you know, that's to me, that's a huge part of it, is not making shots from the outside. And then that's Jeremy's right. It's like missing a couple has gotten their head, and now everybody except for SGA and Dort, and maybe Cason Wallace to a certain extent, those guys, everyone else looks hesitant. And to be quite honest, Dort over the last 2 games, what, 5 of 18 for 3, maybe he ought to be a little bit more hesitant just to fire it. But at least, you know, he catches it and shoots it with confidence. A lot of the other guys look not real sure of themselves.
Yeah, got to shoot better. That's a big part of it. I had a big issue with transition defense. Saw too many alley-oops and points off of missed shots and them just not getting back. Simple stuff like that. And all of a sudden it ballooned up to a double-digit deficit that they couldn't get out of. I mean, I was tired of looking up every time and seeing an alley-oop.
Yeah.
In transition.
But what does that do? When you're taking long shots and bricking them, mm-hmm. 10 of 40 from 3, yeah. That leads to long rebounds and outlet chances on the other end. Thunder got killed on the glass again, 46 to 33. But, I mean, when you shoot as poorly as they've shot, you know, that it's going to create a lot more defensive rebound. They didn't get hammered on the offensive glass as much as just they missed so many shots. Dallas was able to get 37 defensive rebounds to Oklahoma City's 25. And, you know, a big part of what OKC is able to make up is turnovers, and they did a good job of that again last night. Only six, and they created 14. But not being able to capitalize out in the open floor off of turnovers, you know, that's something that has fueled that offense, even it would stagnate a little bit, and it just seems like Dallas is always back. Like the difference in those two, that part of the game with Dallas being able to get open floor opportunities and Oklahoma City not really being able to generate those throughout the series is a big part of why I think, you know, that Dallas has played good defense. And a big part of that is not allowing Oklahoma City to get easy shots early. They're making them work for it. And the longer that shot clock runs each possession, the harder it is to get a good shot. And so Oklahoma City down 3-2 going to Dallas for game six coming up on Saturday night. Anything else from as far as the Thunder goes and what? How surprised were you that Isaiah Joe ran out there to start the game?
A little. I don't think we ever – I mean, we were always suggesting it, we as media type, always thinking that we're suggesting, man, that needs to happen, but a change in the starting lineup. But I was a little surprised to actually see it, and now I don't know. Maybe it's a little frustration coming out right now, but that should have happened in the regular season and maybe not in game five of the Western Conference semifinals.
Why should it happen in the regular season?
To get acclimated, to get used to that.
Well, Oklahoma City won the most games in the West.
Yeah. Everyone was ripping them back then, too.
It's two completely separate things. The regular season and the playoffs.
Right.
It's completely different. I think a big part of why they were able to win so many games was, the rotation wasn't as stagnant as, say, Scott Brooks when you knew at 6:32 on the clock it was somebody's time to go in the game. They were way more flexible than that. But I do think being able to count on five guys to start the game and everybody getting comfortable with the roles over 82 games, that helps immensely. And listen, this series, it's obvious they've gotten off to such bad starts with Giddey on the floor. It's easy to point the finger at him. Are we going to blame him for last night? 5 of 8, 1 of 3. Everybody wants to talk about his plus minus when it's bad. He had the second best plus minus last night. Of course, they were all negative. Everybody on the floor was a negative, except for a couple guys that barely played. I understand the frustration with Giddey, and the analytics and the numbers show it, and just watching him brick open threes, it makes you go, ugh, this guy is killing us. But it's a lot more J-Dub and Chet than it is Josh Giddey. It just is. But Giddey's the easy whipping boy. I mean, this reminds me so much of OU football, where – each year, the fans pick out somebody they hate. It can be a coach. It can be a player. It doesn't matter. And they just blame everything on him, whether or not that's really what's happening or not. J-Dub plays 40 minutes. Giddey plays 12. So,
yeah,
you know, one guy's struggling for a longer period of time than another. By the way,
Giddey's averaged about 12 minutes in this series anyways. Why not just start him anyways then?
Well, the idea is not to fall way behind, and they didn't fall way behind. So that part of it worked. You know, that they got off to a way better start. Hell, they were ahead. It's the first time they've been ahead early in the game since maybe the whole series.
Whole series, yeah.
Because even game one wasn't a very good start. So, yeah, you jump out 8-2, and it's like, hey, this is working. Look at us go. But the lack of consistent three-point shooting and Dallas's defense at the rim has been the difference in this series. And Dallas has gotten somebody to step up each game outside of Luka. And Oklahoma City, Got a good all-around game in game one from a lot of different guys. But, man, you see, we both said one of the biggest differences in these two teams was supposed to be the depth in Oklahoma City's bench. That hasn't been the case. Last night, 18 to 23. 23 to 18, Dallas. Game one, what was it, 45, 46 to 23 or 45 to 23? That needed to carry over, and it just hadn't. And once on the bench, it hasn't been the same guy for Dallas. You know, they've gotten a little bit from Green. Hardaway had the one good quarter. By the way, people that think Tim Hardaway is good are just silly. That dude isn't any good. You remember the game two explosion instead of the other four games where he's been terrible. Last night he hit the side of the backboard, got the rebound, and hit then missed the rim on a three. And he does that all the time. Mm-hmm. Give me Tim Hardaway shooting more than six. I wish he'd get it up 15 times. That only gives the Thunder a better chance. I mean, come. But that is the way that a lot of the reserves are in the NBA. There's a reason why they're on the bench. Because if they can't make, if they don't make shots, you're done. And he played 12 minutes last night. But Derrick Jones, 19. And that's, they played good enough defense that that's really all they needed, you know? Because the Thunder can't make them pay on the offensive end. So what do you think the starting lineup is on Saturday?
The same tonight because they got the good start.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Or I'm sorry, same as last night. Same as last night. My apologies. And because they got that good start, and then they're just hoping they can sustain it. They can shoot better, play better, rebound better.
Yeah, I think
defend better, everything better.
Well, and the fact of it is, and Dakota's exactly right. If J-Dub isn't going to play well, Oklahoma City's not going to win.
No.
He has to play better. Absolutely has to. Last night, Boston finishes up Cleveland, 113-98. Now the big talk around Cleveland is Donovan Mitchell. Where will he go? Where will he be? Are they going to make a choice between him and Darius Garland? You know, he's an interesting cat because he has had monster playoff games.
Mitchell?
Yeah. And he's also had games where you're like, dude, pass the ball.
Yeah.
I think the team that ends up with him is probably going to regret it more than they realize right now at this point. Because I think the idea of Donovan Mitchell is better than what really happens when you have Donovan Mitchell. I don't know. He's just not my favorite. I think he is the epitome of a ball hog.
I've never been a fan of him. I was kind of glad to see Salt Lake get rid of him or move on from him, not get rid of him, but not willing to retain him, however it went down. But I've never been a fan of him. I wouldn't want him on my team.
Yeah, he's going to end up on one of the flashy teams, and about halfway through the season, everybody's going to go, we should have paid more attention to Donovan Mitchell in Utah and Cleveland. And everyone that did is going to go, well, that's the way he's always been. This is the Donovan Mitchell experience. Just fired up. Don't even know you have teammates on the floor. Now, Evan Mobley. Let's hope they move on from him. You know where he'd look good?
Where's that?
Right here.
Oh, yeah.
In an Oklahoma City Thunder uniform. Hanging out here on a Thursday. It is a Thursday, and you know what that means? 50-cent boneless chicken wings at the Boomtown Grill.
Big day.
It is a big day.
Big
Boomtown
day.
Grill, 50-cent boneless chicken wings. They've got all kinds of sauces, mild chipotle, sriracha, garlic parmesan, mango habanero, hot barbecue, kicking bourbon, sweet red chili. All of those at the Boomtown Grill. 50-cent chicken wings all day. Boneless chicken wings. It's delicious. I would steer you toward the mango habanero. But the other flavors are, they're all pretty good. Happy hour 2 to 6, Monday through Friday. 12 big screen TVs, get 11 beers on tap, 30 bottles and cans available for you. Wine selection as well. Check out the Boomtown Grill. Open every day of the week, 7 days a week, 11 to 10. On Sunday through Thursday, 11 to 11, Friday and Saturday. All right, Jared. College football just around the corner. It doesn't seem like it. I know it's just May. But it won't be long until we're right in the thick of it. With the new 12-team playoff coming at us this year for the first time ever, there are a lot better chances for some teams to be able to make their first ever college football playoff appearance. So it got me to thinking, who could do that? You know, Texas was one of those schools that had never made it, and then last year they did. And so who could be Texas this year? Who are the top five teams in your mind that can make their first ever playoff appearance?
You go first. You go first.
Okay.
I'm still compiling.
So at number five.
You mean this year?
I'm talking about this year.
This season,
who has the best chance to make their first playoff appearance?
In any order?
I labeled them 1 through 5.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I did. Number five, I have one a little bit out of left field. The Miami Hurricanes. Miami has transfer quarterback Cam Ward from Washington State in the fold this year. They get Virginia Tech, they get Florida State, and they get Duke all on their home field. They have to go to Louisville. And then, you know who they don't play? They don't play Clemson. They don't play North Carolina. They don't play North Carolina State. And they don't play SMU in the ACC schedule. So at number five for me, I had the Miami Hurricanes. Number four came down to two Big 12 teams. And for simply schedule reasons, I chose Kansas State.
Really?
I chose Kansas State at number four. They do play Arizona, but it's a non-conference game. It's a non-conference home game because they were in that boat. There's two of these in the Big 12 this year. Kansas State and Arizona, and then Baylor and Utah, who played last year, and they just went ahead and played a non-conference game this year since one of them had already happened. And they really didn't, you know, they didn't have the foresight like that OU and Georgia had to just not play last year because they knew they were going to be in the conference, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those games are still happening, but it's not a conference game. Kansas State also gets Oklahoma State and Kansas at home. And they don't have to play Utah or Arizona in the conference. So that's why I went Kansas State number four. Number three, Penn State. Nittany Lions don't play Michigan. They don't play Oregon. They get Ohio State and Washington at home. They do have to go to USC and Wisconsin. But, you know, if you figure three, maybe four teams from the Big Ten would be playoff teams. No Michigan, no Oregon, Ohio State at home. Penn State looks like a likely candidate to finish maybe 10-2, and that would probably be enough in the Big Ten. Number two, I have the Ole Mississippi Rebels. Ole Miss, no Bama, no Texas on their schedule. They were absolutely one of the biggest portal winners throughout the portal season. They get Oklahoma, they get Georgia, both in Oxford. And once again, with 10 teams, I mean, I'm not so sure Ole Miss can't be playing in Atlanta for the SEC title, but I think they'll be good enough and win enough games to be right there as an at-large SEC selection. So Ole Miss number two. And then number one is a Big 12 team. I've got Utah. Utah doesn't play Kansas State. Utah doesn't play Kansas in the Big 12. They do have Arizona, but that's at home. Their hardest game to me is coming to Stillwater. Utah has had a history of success, just hasn't been able to quite get over that hump out in the Pac-12. In their first season in the Big 12 with Cam Rising coming back, the style of football they play, a little bit more physical than what this conference is really used to. I have Utah and as my number one team with the best chance to make their first college football playoff appearance. What say you?
Well, I didn't go in any order. But I gave five. Now you went heavy on schedule and what the schedule looks like. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go heavy on personnel, on what kind of team they return, and basically what kind of conference they're playing in. So again, in no order, but I did put Oklahoma State in this list.
LSU would have been my sixth because of what they return.
They return a lot, and let's face it, OU and Texas out of the conference, it's their chance to take the reins of the Big 12 and be kings of it. I mean, they were almost there last year in the conference title game. So I got them as a shot getting in there. And mind you, this is an expanded playoff year. This kind of opens up this question, like more participants that can get their first shot at it. I put Mizzou on there.
Yeah, there's no chance I'm putting them.
You just don't like them? Or?
Yes.
Yeah, well, all feelings aside, I put them there because, again, personnel. And the conference they play in, if they could look good in it, they could probably get an at-large. Penn State. Now, I put Penn State there, too. It's basically it always in the Big Ten. Now, I know this is now an expanded Big Ten. But, it's always been Ohio State. Here lately, it's been Ohio State and Michigan, Ohio State, the two big dogs. I think Michigan's taken a step back after winning the title. Coaches moved on. New quarterback. I think Penn State can fill that void a little bit. So I think I give them a shot. I put Tennessee right there. I just feel like they're on the cusp with Heupel and getting them playing better. Again, 12 team. I think, that's going to give a lot of opportunities for some really good SEC teams. And I put Utah there too. And they got Cam Rising back.
Yeah, they got him back. I mean.
And if I was picking a 6 team like you just did, I'd probably say Arizona. On the cusp, but I don't know. Was like last year the start of something, or was it like kind of a they had a really good year?
Yeah, they lost their coach.
I think
Fish had a lot to do with kind of that resurgence a little bit of Arizona.
Yeah,
and now he's at Washington. Cupboard left pretty bare up there, I think. But we'll see what he can do. Because, I mean, here's the deal. Arizona was a laughing stock and one of the worst Power Five programs. So it's not like losing a couple of those guys, he can't figure out a way to rebuild Washington from the national title game from what he did for Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, I think Tennessee – really and truly, there's a group of about two or three or four SEC teams that you could have picked from. Ole Miss, Tennessee.
Yeah, I like Ole Miss.
Missouri.
Yeah.
There's those, behind, say, Georgia, or what people think, Georgia, Texas, depending on what you think about Alabama and in the first year under Kalen DeBoer. But, there's just those few teams there that never made it. That all appear, a win here or a win there is going to make the difference in between those few teams on who might be the right answer to that question. I think it's probably that way up in the Big Ten for a couple of teams. I was trying to rack my USC hasn't made it, have they?
No.
Isn't it interesting that neither one of us even considered them? I didn't. I never considered them for this list. I'm going to need to see post-Caleb, Big Ten, what that looks like.
It's not even that. It's the other side of the ball. It's defense, really. Like, I have no doubt the offense will be humming for USC. It's always going to be the defense is going to be the issue, and I can't trust that to put them on this list.
Yeah, but, with 12, you can't – that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
That's what's different about it. With four, the defense is going to cost you a game. And if you don't play very good in another one, that's 10-2. Well, guess what? You're probably not in. But with 12, especially in the Big Ten, I think that it won't – it's never going to allow him to win a title. But I don't think it'll be as big a detriment to making it to the playoffs as it was with only four. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go with...
that is true on the Texans.
Grinch is gone.
I mean, that, yeah. But remember when everybody thought he was the answer when he fired Mike at OU?
Yeah.
Turns out that was... No.
All right, now, next question about the non-playoffs. Who are the best five programs in the playoff era that have not...
Man, that's a tough one.
...made the college football playoffs?
The answer to that question is like, okay, if you think this team should have been in the playoff that year, then whose spot should they have taken, right?
Or like, just a team is, I mean... Like
they were really good, and
yeah,
and if
they just never quit a play just, here, a play yeah. there, whatever. And
like for example, I almost put like in 2021 Notre Dame, right? They went 11-1.
No. They've made the playoff.
Oh, who has never made? I thought you meant
yeah,
a team that
no,
was left
no,
out
no, no.
that was good.
No.
Should have
programs okay. that never made.
All right, well, like actually, I have two teams on here.
Okay.
That have never made the playoff, and they were really really good, and were left out, and
okay.
ironically, they're from the same season.
Okay.
2014 Baylor and TCU.
Yeah, but TCU made the playoff.
Oh, that's right. So just put Baylor on there.
Okay.
I hate this question, by the way, because I cannot remember who's all made the playoff
yeah,
and who hasn't. And it's going to get harder now that this damn thing's expanded.
Well, it won't be a very good question anymore once there's 12. It was like, who didn't make the BCS title game? Well, there's a whole bunch of them.
Well, there's
that.
A bunch there, yeah.
All right, so at number five, I have...
I think my answer's here.
Okay, I'll give you some time. At number five, I have USC. In the playoff era, they were 71 wins going into last year. And I think...
So you're not... You're just picking... I got you.
And I think they're
just
better...
The program as a whole.
Yes.
Gotcha,
yes.
Gotcha.
Over that 10-year window that never made it. And I think they're better positions just with the recruiting and the coach and being able to eventually bust through there. Number four, I have Penn State. Penn State was really close a couple of times, was actually a Big Ten champ one year, then didn't make the playoff. And they were going into last year, they had 78 wins. Number three, I've got OSU. OSU was 79 wins going into last year. You know, 2021, they were what, 6 inches from the playoff? And that loss to Baylor when Des Jackson didn't quite get into the end zone. Number two, I have Wisconsin. The Badgers, 83 wins. Hasn't been quite as good the last couple of years, but, you know, for 2014 to, what, 2020 or 2021, seemed like they were always the West champ. They were always playing Ohio State, you know, and it's win one game and you're probably in the playoff. They never quite could get it done. And then number one, I've got Utah. Utah doesn't have as many wins as Wisconsin through that time, but they got the conference titles. And there's been a few times where they had, you know, the times they didn't win a conference title, they had a chance if they would have won a game to be in that playoff. And so that's kind of the way I did with those five, ranked them as the best programs to not have made the playoffs
sure.
just yet.
Yeah. I'll go, and if we're talking about a time span here, because, and I'll tip my cap to Baylor navigating whatever happened with the Art Briles situation, making solid hires in Matt Rhule and now Dave
Aranda.
Aranda. I would say Aranda. For some, Aranda. So I put them in this. Again, I'm not ranking them in any order. I put Ole Miss right there. If it wasn't for their conference, right, they would probably get a lot more consideration, and they've won at a high level. They're just losing to Alabama and Georgia.
Isn't it
right?
interesting, though, for Ole Miss, OU's in this category too now? But, yeah, the reason why some of these guys have been left out was the SEC. And now I think the reason why some of these guys are going to get in is because the SEC.
Yeah, yeah. Penn State, right there, same reasons you gave. Utah, same thing. They got those conference titles, just couldn't get in. And I kind of got a wild card here. How about Central Florida? They've had a nice little run in this time span, this time frame. Maybe not lately, like last year, year mm-hmm. before. But they put, I mean with Frost there, they were really, really good, self-proclaimed national champions without getting in when they went undefeated. Probably should have got a nod to see what would happen. But they've been really successful, just haven't been able to you know, break in like Cincinnati did, a few years later. So,
yeah, I thought about Boise in that just because of the amount of wins they've had.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they probably aren't what they were in the, you know, the early 2010s, they've still been super duper successful. Just not quite. They really, it's funny because they were way closer to making a BCS title game than they ever really were the playoff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That is true.
It just kind of fell off just a little bit once the playoff era started. I think it's good. We can talk about game, and we're going to have plenty of time to get there. But, you know, the schedule is starting to come out as far as TV. I know Fox released a couple of their big noon kickoffs. And, man, are there some really fun games coming. I know ESPN showed their first weekend. You know, Oklahoma, Friday night at 6 against Temple. You know, Texas at Michigan is week 2. It's going to be.
There's one in there I can't remember. Clemson and is it Georgia?
Ooh.
It's a SEC. I want to say it's Georgia. I think week 1.
Let's look. I know A&M had a good game. Yeah, 31st.
Yeah, A&M hosts Notre Dame, right?
Okay, that's what it was. Yeah, Clemson, Georgia at Clemson.
Georgia at Clemson. Yeah, that, you know, Clemson's like on this verge. They're like, I won't call it a must win for the season, but it might be a must win for Dabo's sake.
Yeah, Dabo.
So he can say, listen, I'm still doing it the old school way, and I can still win big. I could beat these big dogs.
Did you see what he said the other day about the portal?
I heard reaction to it, but I didn't hear exactly what he said.
He said that they sign a whole bunch of transfers every year from high school. They're just transferring to college. Man, I'm afraid for Dabo's sake, he is going – we're going to find out. We're going to find out if you can do it the way you used to be able to do it and not give in to the new school way of this. I don't know that the portal is the end-all, be-all. I still believe in high school recruiting way more than a lot of people do, just because of the sheer numbers.
Right.
You get to have 25 of those every single year, whereas in the portal, if you kind of exchange 12, that's a lot. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
For established good programs. Now, if you're, you know, Dion going to Colorado, you can whip out 40 a year and whatever. But as far as teams that, I mean, I will agree with him just a little bit in that they have recruited well enough and been successful enough to where they, you know, they probably shouldn't have to use the portal as much as other places. But man, just completely shutting it off and not paying attention to it whatsoever, I sure think that that's going to be a downfall. Of Clemson slipping from, you know, and they're still in that ACC where they should be the preeminent program. Maybe Florida State's catching a little bit of fire to be right there alongside them, and who knows about the U. But with those comments and just his complete basically disdain for even wanting to use the portal, I just don't know if that's not going to end up being the end of what Clemson was under Dabo, which was as good as anybody for a certain period of time. You know, he was the only one. Now Kirby's doing a little bit at Georgia, but I mean, he was the only one that went toe-to-toe and had results against Nick Saban in Alabama's dynasty. But it sure doesn't. It doesn't feel like they're going to be able to hang on to that, does it?
No.
Don't think so either. We'll continue with some college football at maybe once a week, maybe twice a week, just to kind of whet your appetite about it. Wrapping up a Thursday edition of the show. Big thank you to our friends at Rother Brothers, Highway 183 north of Clinton. Rother Brothers, family-owned dealership. It started back in Kingfisher in 1976. It's now grown to 3 different locations in Clinton, Fairview, and Kingfisher. Rother Brothers offers a variety of agriculture and outdoor power equipment, and it's second to none. All of Oklahoma, there isn't a friendlier or more knowledgeable staff than the one at Rother Brothers. Happy to help you find either the perfect piece of equipment or the parts that you've been looking for. Stop by, give them a call, 580-323-1981. That is Rotha Brothers in Clinton. Mike and the gang over there. Been there for a long time and been very, very successful for a long time. Give them a shout over there at Rotha Brothers. All right, Jared, second major of the season is underway at Valhalla in Louisville, Kentucky, the PGA Championship. Isn't it interesting that the PGA and the Preakness are the same weekend? Because it feels like the PGA and the Preakness are both viewed as the lesser of the majors or the lesser of the Triple Crown races in horse racing. I think that it's kind of funny that it works out that way. Looking at the leaderboard, a name that a lot of people liked. I don't know a lot of people could pull the trigger on him winning because he hasn't missed a cut since the Masters in 2022. He also hasn't won since then. And that's Xander Schauffele, 5-under through 9 holes, leading by a shot. Then you got Tony Finau, 4-under through 6. We get to a bunch of get to a couple of guys that quite frankly, I haven't played very well this year, but are so far. Former Cowboy Victor Hovland, 3-under through 7. Jordan Spieth, 3-under through 6. Some guys you never heard of. One of the favorites pre-tournament, Rory McIlroy, 2-under through 7. Hideki's 2-under through 7. Tyrrell Hatton's 2-under through 7. Taylor Moore, 2-under through 5. Some other bigger names. Cam Smith, Brooks Koepka, 1-under. Max Homa, 1-under. Sahith Tagala, 1-under. Tommy Fleetwood, 1-under. Justin Thomas, even par, making the turn. Keegan Bradley's even. Bryson, even. Tiger's 1-over, playing number 9. Adam Scott, 1-over. Anyway, it's kind of an early look. I think a lot of people believe that the winning score is going to be outrageous. Possible like record setting week because it's soft, the greens are perfect, and it's pretty wide. I saw that John Wood, one of the former caddy, an announcer now, was talking with some caddies, and they believe it could be upwards of 20 under to what it takes to win this golf tournament because of the conditions and the rain they've had. And you know, the rough is really thick. You've seen videos of it, but if you keep it in the fairway, the greens are perfect and they're soft, and that's recipe for these guys to rip stuff apart. So probably not surprising you see Xander out of the gates this quickly at 5-under. We you know you might it's maybe one of those weeks where you could see, you know, the magical 62 to break records in majors. We'll see, but so far the scoring is really, really good.
Yeah, I'm of course playing well. I wonder, you know, if the weather had anything to do with that, and I think it did. And we got a lot of really, really good golfers out there too. We've mentioned that. This is the one time where they all are there. So it doesn't really shock me to see great starts by these guys. We'll see how long they can hold on. And nice to see Hovland where he's at, but it's still 10 a.m. Thursday. Yeah. So let's cautiously enjoy this for the guys that we like to root for, and hope we get some really good numbers and some exciting finishes to these rounds, especially on Sunday.
Yeah, we've seen in the 3 times that the PGA has been at Valhalla, it's been fantastic finishes every time. With Mark Brooks winning, obviously Tiger and Bob May in the playoff, Ricky and Rory, Phil's kind of hanging out, going down the stretch in 2014. We've seen really, really good finishes for this golf course. The Ryder Cup was fun to watch in 2008 when it was there. So there's something about it. I don't know if it's just because it's not that hard. I don't know why, but it does seem like it builds and creates drama each and every time it hosts an event. Which, why not, man? It doesn't. You know, if it was a U.S. Open and they were 20 under, I'd probably be upset about that just because the U.S. Open isn't supposed to do that. But like we talked about yesterday, the PGA, it doesn't really have an identity other than the strongest field in golf. And so there's not that expectation from years past that it's supposed to be this just impossible test of golf, like the U.S. Open always is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not Augusta, and it's not, you know, weather conditions. You know, everybody just accepts when you go to the British Open, if it's not windy and rainy, they're going to light it up because there's not a bunch of trouble at a lot outside of maybe Carnoustie. Every other time, if the weather's good, they shoot 15 or 20 under in the British Open, and nobody cares. Because there's also been years at that same venue when the weather sucked that it was like 2 or 3 under one, or over sometimes even at some of those places. So I don't. People will be up in arms about it happening at the PGA, but you know what? Who cares? Give us an exciting Sunday. You know, I heard a couple of the owners on the two of the four in the ownership group of Valhalla the other night on of live from the PGA, hoping that they, you know, for the first time since like 1947, the Kentucky Derby had a 3-way photo finish, and they were kind of alluding to that, like hoping you could get a 3-horse photo finish down the stretch of this one here at Valhalla coming up on Sunday. So that's a early look at the leaderboard with Schauffele 5-under. Playing 5-under through 10 holes, leading by a shot over Finau. But a bunch of really good names, a bunch of big names, a bunch of the guys that a lot of people would have picked are there, including then, you know, Spieth and Hovland, who you probably didn't pick because they didn't have much form coming in. Now they're playing well. And it just enhances what we need to look forward to when guys like that are up there playing well and up on the leaderboard. So,
yeah,
like you said, it's 10 a.m. 10 a.m. on Thursday of a major. But it's already shaping up to be, you know, a mix, and we'll see if the, you know, we'll see if the Doug Gims and the Steven Yeagers can hang out and hang on and still be there, or if we get one of those star-studded leaderboards that golf so desperately needs to kind of get back into the consciousness of the sports fan, not only the golf fan, just the sports fan. Do you think because of LIV, excitement grows for these majors just because it is the one out of 3 or 4 times a year we're actually going to get to see all of the best players in the same field?
Yeah, I do. The true golf fan wants to see that, right? So I think that excitement grows. And then when you get those familiar names and you know, the casual fan, instead of, you know, I mean, I do it. I tune into, it doesn't have to be a major, any golf tournament, and I see the leaderboard, and I see a bunch of guys I have no idea who they are, I'm turning it. I'll be honest with you. I'm like, this doesn't interest me. But if I turn this on tomorrow afternoon, and I'm seeing
Scheffler, Schauffele, Brooks,
exactly,
Rory.
I'm staying there. And so I think more people like myself, who are kind of casual fans of this, will think, oh, okay, this is good. I want to see this. So I think the excitement level, as long as all those guys are still up there, you know, still playing at that high level and up there at that top of that leaderboard that we first check when we turn it on, those TVs will stay on and the excitement will the interest will stay.
The block party is over.
Yeah, what is that?
Okay, you remember Michael Block, the PGA pro from last year?
Okay.
Who qualified because of a top 15 finish, and then his internet celebrity blew up, and it really got a little annoying with all the – anyhow.
Yeah.
He started out bogey quad, 5-over through 2. He's still 5-over through 13, but as far as getting Michael Block jammed down your throat, which it was a cool story, don't get me wrong. It just – like anything that's cool now – that's kind of fad and cool, it gets overblown, and then it starts to annoy. That's what the block party did for me last summer. I mean, it was a heck of a performance, but let's not pretend that he is a touring pro. You know, just let him stay in his own lane, and he clearly enjoyed the celebrity of it all. Maybe we can get...
why not? It was a trip, you know?
Oh, no, it was cool. I don't blame him.
Yeah.
I don't blame him. Maybe we can get Derek to do that. The new pro here. See if you can't get him to qualify for the PGA one of these times and play well, and then, you know, that can annoy the rest of the golf world. But it would be our annoyance, so it won't be as bad, right?
Sure.
Anyhow, it's going to be – I think it I have a feeling this PGA, it's almost like it's in the cards for it to be a really good tournament. Because golf needs a really, really good tournament to kind of get back up there.
Yeah.
Get back in the game.
Yeah.
All right, that'll do it for a Thursday edition of the Skinny on Sports. Everybody have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow to wrap up the week. Right here on 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way!